Mars Prasadam, Masa Kirtan. And I'm sure it was good. But I attended Gorpurnima festivals in three different temples, because one had their celebration on Sunday, and two of them had their celebration on Saturday, so I moved around. So your temple president here is selected a topic for us to discuss while we're visiting here, and I gave him a menu and he picked one from the menu. We're going to be discussing, well, the title of the book is Sri Bhakti Loka, which is a title of a book written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing two of the verses from Upadesha Amrita, or Nectar of Instruction. How many have read Nectar of Instruction? You read Nectar of Instruction? This is like an exercise. He's still in kirtan. Well, Nectar of Instruction, two of the verses of Nectar of Instruction are describing six items or six ways in which bhakti is enriched or strengthened, and six ways or items by which bhakti is destroyed. Shadhir bhaktir vinashati, or shadhir, shadhir six, shadhir bhaktir prasidhyati. Bhakti can be made perfect or perfected by six things. So the six and the six, we call them in this stuff. And now those are the two verses that Sri Bhakti Aloka discuss. And what I'm going to do is take you through some of that. Because if we're going to do all of it, we'd have to stay together for at least 2.5 days. And do nothing like this, so we'll just go through part of it. I've discussed this, or it's recorded, the whole presentation, the whole Sri Bhakti Welcome, so sometime you can hear the whole thing if you like, it's recorded. Amongst our acharyas in specific succession, particularly immediately following Lord Chaitanya, most prominent are these two brothers, the six Goswamis, were led by Sanatan and Rupa Goswami. Is it possible to please lights and gloves or the pictures and make more clear? The two principal surfaces of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami were writing books that would establish the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, because Lord Chaitanya didn't write, other than Shikshastakam, he didn't write. But he instructed, and from his instructions, Rupa and Sanatana Goswami were to elaborately present in written form for future generations, that means for us, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And so they wrote profuse literature, and very profound literature. And one of those writings is Upadeshamrita by Rupa Goswami. When Prabhupada just consider how strong it was, that Prabhupada's commitment to complete the 12 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. But he took a little detour from the 12 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam when I first became a devotee to translate the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. You've seen that book, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Maybe you've read that book. It's extracted from Chaitanya Charitamrita, where there are six sections, five sections. There are principal teachings. Lord Chaitanya instructing Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Lord Chaitanya instructing Prakashananda Sarasati. Lord Chaitanya's talks with Ramananda Roy. And the other two were Lord Chaitanya's discussions with Sanatana Rupa Goswami. And after translating, it's like, you know, a summary of the instructions within Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Prabhupada went back to Srimad Bhagavatam. Then he took another detour and he translated Rupa Goswami's Nectar Devotion. Then back to Srimad Bhagavatam and Rupa Goswami's Nectar of Instruction. Because these two books are so prominent, so important, out of many of the writings of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, these are so important. Because they're fundamental instructions on how to perform devotional service. Rupa Goswami had also established deity worship. Who were the deities that Rupa Goswami worshipped? In Vrindavan, he worshipped. What's the temple of Rupa Goswami in Vrindavan? Govindaji Temple. Govindaji Temple. So there's the Pratibhoga deities, or the replacement deities, because the original Govindaji deity was taken to Jaipur. And here's a mantra that whenever we have yajnas, we say this mantra, we can recite it together. Divya Dvindaranya Kalpa Dramadaha Srimad Ratnagara Singhasanasto Srimad Ratha Srila Govinda Devo Heshtani Vishnevyamano Smarami. This is a prayer or pranam to the presiding deity of Abhideya. Abhideya means when you act in devotional service. Rupa Goswami's principal teaching was how to perform the activities of devotional service. The presiding deity of that section of spiritual knowledge is Radha Govinda. And this is the prayer unto them. I meditate on Sri Radha and Govinda. They are seated on a throne in a mansion bedecked with gems under the desire trees of Vrindavan, being served by their loving female attendants. And this is the original Govindaji deity, or Radha Govinda, in Jaipur, that Rupa Goswami worshipped on their throne in Jaipur. One of their many thrones. Very opulent deity and very merciful deity. So, we'll begin by offering our prayers to Rupa Goswami and Sri Sri Radha Govinda that the teachings of how to perform devotional service most effectively can be something that we'll gain from their association, we'll receive from their kind gift to us, as Lord Chaitanya instructed Rupa Goswami to enshrine his teaching through his writings for our benefit. So let's pray that we can receive that very carefully. Their constant meditation while writing was on, just as we heard that prayer, the beautiful pastimes of Radha and Krishna and their attendant sakis, serving them with great joy. How to render that standard of devotional service? We're not there, but how to come to that stage where we can enter into those loving pastimes with Krishna. That's the goal. It's not meant for some other people besides ourselves. That's what the teaching is for. This is a photograph of Rupa Goswami's handwriting. There's a statement in Chaitanya Charitamrita when Lord Chaitanya saw his handwriting, he said, "This isn't handwriting. This is strings of pearls." Even his handwriting is beautiful. What to speak of what he wrote about. One of the principal teachings of Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Devotion is this one. Let's recite it together. Anyavilashitashanam jnana-samadhyanavratam anupamena krishnanoshinanam bhakti-ruptama. The translation, when first-class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires, knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy, and fruitive action. The devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. This verse stands out among many of the verses of Rupa Goswami, although it's very simple. It's the embodiment of the whole of bhakti, the essence of bhakti, to render that which is free from material desire, specifically karma and jnana, and is following, pursuing, cultivating that which Krishna desires, which is that which is pleasing to Krishna. When one does like that, even in our stage, in the practice, the sadhana stage, it's considered uttam bhakti, the topmost form of expression of love of God in the practicing stage. One more, this is by Narottam Das Thakur. He was in the next generation of followers of Lord Chaitanya. Narottam Das Thakur was initiated by Rupa Goswami and was taught, instructed in spiritual teachings by Jiva Goswami. But he wrote this very famous Prarthana verse, Shirupa Manjari Pada, Say More Samhada, Say More Bhajana Puja, Say More Pranadana, Say More Abharana, Say More Jivera, Jivanera, Jivana. The lotus feet of Shirupa Manjari are my treasure, my devotional service, and my object of worship. They give my life meaning, and they are the life of my life. Say more, Jivanera, Jivana, the life of my life, the feet of Rupa Goswami. That's a good place to be, at the feet of Rupa Goswami, Sri Rupa Manjari Pada. Because Rupa Goswami, in Krishna's Leela, is Rupa Manjari. And Rupa Manjari is the intimate assistant of Lalita Sati. And Lalita Sati is the intimate one of his eight principal gopis. And amongst the eight principal gopis, Lalita and Vishakha are most intimate. So Rupa Goswami is up there. Very confidential. Very confidential. And he's teaching to us here in the material world how to render devotional service of the most excellent standard. So please be very attentive and honor carefully the work that he's giving. Srila Prabhupada, in his quarters at Radha Damodar Temple, would look out the window, as you see, the window right here, taking his prasadam, and what was he seeing outside that window? The samadhi of Rupa Goswami. One time, in a very confidential way, Prabhupada said that Rupa Goswami came before him. and encouraged him to continue his work and to go to the West and take the teachings of Lord Chaitanya that Rupa Goswami had written and give it according to the order of his Guru Maharaj, give it to the English-speaking parts of the world. Personally, Rupa Goswami spoke to him in that way. So, these words we've received in Nectar of Instruction, and now also we're going to receive Bhakti Vinod Thakur's rendering of the same understanding in a more expanded form. It's not a different presentation, it's just longer sets of verses and explanations of, bring the lens to higher magnification to look at the subject matter. So, Upadeshamrita, which Rupa Goswami taught, has one's devotional services spoiled, vinashyati, vinash, destroyed, bhakti is destroyed, when he becomes too entangled in the following six activities. This is the summary of the verse. Atyahara, overeating or too much collecting. Prayasa, over-endeavoring for mundane things that are difficult to obtain. Prajalpa, you know what this one is, talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters. Prajalpa. Niyamagraha, practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for spiritual advancement, or niyama agraha, rejecting the rules and regulations of scripture and working independently. So those are the first four. There's two more. Jana sangha, associating with worldly minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness, and laoyam, being greedy for mundane achievements. So this is a summation of this first verse of the two, that those things that destroy bhakti. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur expresses that if one wants to engage in pure devotional service, it is necessary to follow the above instructions of Sri Rupa Goswami. If one neglects to follow these instructions, attaining devotion to Lord Hari is extremely rare. Means forget it. It's not going to happen. But, Krishna could bestow special mercy upon somebody, and even that somebody can manifest loving devotional service. Jagai and Madhai. They were just recipients of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda's mercy. We shouldn't wait around for that to happen to us. We should cultivate according to this standard. So, this evening's verse is going to focus on the first of them, Atyahara, overeating or too much collecting, to be avoided. So, the procedure that Bhakti Vinod Thakur would often write in is he would pose a question and then give the answer, and following the answer, then another question related to the answer, and then another answer, and so forth, and that one would unfold the message that he wanted to present. So what does Atyahara mean? And he supplies the answer. Ahara means bhojana, or eating. Or it can also mean, expanded meaning is enjoying sense objects. Just like when I was a new devotee, we had two refrigerators. One was a bhoga refrigerator, the other was a prasada refrigerator. We called it a bhoga refrigerator because it's before you make the offerings. It's bhoga. And after we make offerings, it's prasadam. And we don't mix the two, so and we don't throw out prasadam, so we had a separate refrigerator. Here we have cows and, you know, take care of leftover prasadam. So, bhojan is the act of eating specifically with the idea of enjoyment. Or indulging the senses for the purpose of enjoyment in a broader sense of the term. So there are five senses, and each of the senses are five sense objects. That's what he covers next. Form, seeing beautiful something. Something beautiful with the eyes. Something very nice to hear, chirping with the crickets. Big orchestra out here. Sounds for the ears, smells for the nose, taste for the tongue, and for the sense of touch, something that has its, when it's hot, you want it a little more cold, something hard or something soft, something that feels, according to the sense of touch, something pleasing. So that's the sense of ahara, or bhojana, eating, or contacting sense objects for the purpose of enjoyment. Now what does Krishna say about contacting objects of the senses for the purpose of enjoyment? There's a nice verse in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna speaks about that. Yehi samsparsha cha bhoga, same word as in bhojana. Yehi samsparsha cha bhoga, what's the rest? Dukkha yonaya evite. What does dukkha mean? Dukkha means distress. Sukha and dukkha. Happiness and distress. And in this world, we find both. People want happiness, so they bring their senses in contact with sense objects for the purpose of happiness. Yehi samsparsha ja. Samsparsha is senses contacting objects. Ja, ja means birth, like janmasthami, janma. When the senses come in contact with sense objects with the anticipation of bhoga, enjoyment, you get punched. Dukkha yonaya evite. It's called happiness in the mode of passion. From Bhagavad Gita, we know what is happiness in the mode of passion. In the beginning, it looks very nice. And then, it turns into misery. Happiness that looks very nice, it turns into misery, is what is being spoken of here. Indulging the senses and sense objects brings misery. It's like, we got cheated, or we fell for it, we got suckered. Prabhupada, in one lecture in the Brooklyn Temple, was explaining this phenomenon. He said, Maya is beckoning. Come on and enjoy me. Come on and enjoy me, so I can kick you in the face. That is mine. In the traditional literature of the Greeks, Iliad and Odyssey, one of the characters is the siren. It's like a mystical personality woman on the sea who's beckoning. Same way, it's Maya. Come on and enjoy me. Come on and enjoy me. Like a prostitute. Come on and enjoy me so I can kick you in the face. So, the sense of trying to enjoy sense objects is like that. And one who indulges in that, it destroys bhakti. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, this type of material enjoyment, tasting something, smelling something, hearing something, it's compulsory for an embodied soul. Without this, a living entity cannot survive. I mean, try to stop your senses. Like, shut down your ears, shut down your eyes, just like, close all the doors. You can't do that. You'd be like, you're dead. Or, it's anesthetizing the soul. Putting you in under anesthesia, and you're like, practically dead. So, the idea is not eliminating these things. The idea is doing these things only in relation to Krishna and for the service of Krishna. That's bhakti. So, as soon as the living entity gives up sense enjoyment, he leaves his body. Therefore, giving up sense enjoyment is only a figment of the imagination. It cannot be applied in practice. Nice try, but it's not a philosophy that we live by. We were having some discussion over this weekend with a number of devotees that are reaching out to new people in New York City. And one of the things that they, in the course of the discussion with these new people were realizing, the impersonal idea is not something that is that a philosophy that you can live by? Maybe a high-sounding philosophy. Become one. But it's not a philosophy you can live by. Nor is shutting your senses down. It may sound interesting. Like, you know, give up false ego. That sounds nice. Because who likes false ego? Bad. False ego's bad. So just give up false ego. But then what do you have? You don't have an idea of the serious soul service to Krishna. You have impersonalism. And it's not a philosophy that people live by. They have to exist. We have to have senses. We have to exist. We exist in relationships with people. When Prabhupada would confront people who were speaking impersonalism, sometimes he would say, it's all one? It's all one? Then give me all your money. If it's all one, your money, my money, the same, give me all your money. You're not going to do that because that's not a philosophy that you live by. Or, it's all one? Then why are you wearing a shirt instead of a cotton ball? Because the shirt is just cotton. It's all one. Cotton ball, shirt, same thing. Why don't you wear cotton ball? We make distinctions. One time, I heard this from Jayatrita Swami about at least 10 times. He likes telling this story. When he was, do any of you know Jayatrita Swami? You know who he is? Okay, a couple of you. He is the chief editor of Prabhupada's books. One of the chief editors. Perhaps the chief editor. And you know how much education he had? He didn't finish high school. He didn't finish high school because he thought it was a waste of time. Instead, he studied Prabhupada's books, and that way he learned so many things, including English, including editing. So when he was a new devotee, so he's like 17, 18 years old. And he's attending this class at 22nd Avenue. And, you know, assembly people like we have here. And one of the people in the assembly was a young American girl from the Upper East Side who had been attending one of the impersonal Swami's lectures. And she was, you know, one of these with big eyes and big smile, face on her face all the time. And everything was wonderful. So she was listening to Prabhupada speaking, and at the end, she said, Swamiji, in the end, isn't it true that it's all one? And Prabhupada became like fire. Is it all one? It's all one. If it's all one, then why don't you put your food here? It's all one. Instead of here, put your food here. It's all one. She burst out crying, and Jai Ketu Swami was going, yay! Swami told her, it's not all one. So, Bhakti Vinod Thakur is saying, this is not a philosophy that we live by. You stop your senses, and that way you achieve perfection. It's not nice try, but it's not something that's practical. Then what's practical? What's the message? We're supposed to use these senses in Krishna's service. What does Krishna say about this topic? He says in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. One who restrains the senses, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. Well, Krishna says the same thing that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying. He invokes the authority of Krishna to support his statement. So, since we can't stop existing and still have without having activity, then what are we to do? We work in a responsible manner to maintain body and soul together and dedicate those activities to service to Krishna. What should be the mood in which one performs these activities? Bhaktivinoda Thakur answers, they should not be done in the mood of enjoyment. If this instruction is neglected, one's qualification as a human being is lost. What to speak of Krishna? You start becoming an animal, or as good as, no better than, an animal. Therefore, one should transform all his bodily activities into activities favorable to the devotional service of the Lord in a humble serving mood. That is bhakti yoga. And Bhakti Nyotakura raises the question, what other things does Rupa Goswami say, not only in Upadeshamrita but elsewhere? So here's from Nectar of Devotion, chapter 2, or Upadeshamrita, Bhakti Prasamrita Sindhu, the second chapter of these verses 255-256. When one is not attached to anything, but at the same time accepts everything in relation to Krishna, one is rightly situated above possessiveness, yukta vairagya. On the other hand, one who rejects everything without knowledge of his relationship to Krishna is not complete in his renunciation. Do those verses sound familiar to you? There's yukta vairagya, that principle of engaging things. Nirbandha Krishna sambande yuktam vairagyam upsite. Sound familiar? That's Rupa Goswami's teaching. Those Krishna sambandha, those things that have a sambandha, relationship with Krishna, use them in his service. And when you use that which belongs to Krishna in Krishna's service, that's the yukta vairagya. Yukta means engaging, and vairagya means detachment. Yukta vairagya principle. But there's the palgu vairagya, false renunciation. The false renunciation is you just give things up. But what is it that's yours to give up? Nothing. There's a I don't know how much you have this happening here in Guyana, but it's common in different places in America where professors or high school teachers, people teach, some of the times the religious groups, they bring their group to the temple to, you know, to check, to teach their students or introduce their students to Hinduism or bhakti or, you know, something like that. So, a common, I've had a lot of experience of addressing those audiences. And what they're not so interested in is what our teachings are. They always want to know things that are on the bodily platform. Why do we shave your head? What is there meaning to the color of the robe that you wear? What's the stuff on your forehead? Why are you vegetarian? And then another question that's common, not always asked, those they always ask, you have to tell them those answers because they're going to ask it anyway, although it's, you're not going to make advancement in spiritual life if you know what Tilak is, but anyway. So, a common question is, in order to be a member of this organization, a part of this religion, do you have to give up all your worldly possessions? Is that, you've heard that phrase before? It's like you become a monastic or a monk, you take a vow of renunciation of all your worldly possessions. So they think that, you know, that the Hare Krishna people are so, like, into their religion that maybe they have the same, you know, you got to give up all your worldly possessions vows. And my answer to them is, no, you don't have to give up all your worldly possessions. You just have to give up the idea that you have worldly possessions to give up. And they go, huh? Could you say that again? Sure. Because the misconception is, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. So what you have to give up is that misconception. You don't have to give it up, you have to give up the object. Just give up the misconception that it's yours. And to do that, then you have another conception in its place. And it's the property of God. And if something's the property of somebody else, what do? You use that something in their service. Or you don't have anything to do with it. It's just their property. There's some cars out there in the parking lot. I can walk by and say, I renounce this one, I renounce that one. What's the meaning? It's not mine to renounce. Then, what's the proper way of seeing that something? It belongs to somebody. If I, we should use whatever it is that we come across that is placed within our care in service to Krishna. There's some nice flowers to be offered to Krishna, and so on. Whatever there is. Our interaction with that something is for the service to Krishna only, and then not otherwise. That's like the tortoise example of Bhagavad Gita. The tortoise can extend his limbs or can withdraw his limbs. If there's some service to Krishna, the limbs are extended. And if there's no service to Krishna, the limbs are withdrawn. So this is the Atyahara principle. We accept those things which are objects of the senses for the purpose and in the mood of service to Krishna. And that's complete renunciation. That's Lord Chaitanya's teaching. That's what this verse is saying here by Rupa Goswami. He also states the same principle in Upadeshamrita by the prohibition part. One should not overeat or over-collect. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in summary, If one accepts sense objects in spirit of enjoyment, then that is adhyahara. But if the same sense objects are accepted as the Lord's mercy and only as far as required and favorable for devotional service, then it is not adhyahara. If sense objects are honestly accepted as the Lord's mercy, then yukta vairagya is easily attained. We're almost done. Conclusion. Two things. Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes or invokes a statement by Lord Chaitanya. One should accept sense objects without attachment and chant Krishna's names. One should not endeavor for palatable foodstuffs and fine clothes. Accept the sanctified Bhagavat Prasad that is easily obtainable. This is a devotee's lifestyle. Whatever is required, take only that. If the practitioner takes or accumulates more than necessary, his spiritual life will be lost, due to being controlled by material mellows. If he does not properly accumulate, then the body, which is his means of worship, will not be protected. So, something, but not too much. And not even that something, not in the spirit of enjoyment, but in the spirit of serving Krishna, maintaining the body so it's properly suited for Krishna's service. Then, commenting on this and concluding, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, there's householders and there's renunciates. There's some men wearing saffron here, so that's the renunciate program. And some wearing white, and that's the householder program. Householders can collect in order to maintain their family members. They should earn their livelihood and save according to religious principles. With this savings, they should serve the Lord, the devotees, guests, family members, and themselves. If the householder collects more than his requirement, then this is an impediment to his devotional service and in his achieving the Lord's mercy. Of course, probably most of us, this isn't a problem because we're poor. But it's a principle that one should not be hankering to, not be poor, I wish I could accumulate some money. That anticipation, that expectation, that aspiring for that, will harm and keen your devotional service. And as far as renunciates, they're not to collect anything at all, so this is finished. Hence, saving too much and earning too much are both adhyahara. And that's the end of this first of the six items that Shadvir, Bhaktir, Vinashyati, that destroy Bhakti. So, any questions or comments? Yes?
I think it was Rupa Goswami who actually did the formula. I can't remember exactly where, as regards number two, how further collecting the program. Said that 50% of him, for maintenance, 50% of his consciousness, like that. But I'm just wondering how does that apply, to...
Did you hear the question? Repeat the question. When Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami retired, they divided their savings in the following way. 25% was saved for emergency, 25% was for family members, 50% was for the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. and then they had just their 25% from emergency left, and they used that for an emergency. They got Sanatana Goswami out from the clutches of the Kazi's constables. We had at our GBC meeting this daring discussion because Anuttama Prabhu, you know Anuttama, was he's a GBC representative in the Washington D.C. area. He had put together a written proposal for the GBC to consider that throughout the whole of this time there should be a system in the Christian terminology, it's called tithing, but where some percentage of your earnings are given to the cause of devotional service directly or to the temple and then to national causes and international causes, some like percentage like that. And the percentage that he mentioned was 10%. And then, like, is it 10% of gross or 10% after taxes? And then he, you know, in the whereas section of the preamble section of the proposal, he said, Rupa Goswami said 50%, but many people find it hard to do that. So at least 10%. Then we had this nice discussion about, well, wait a minute, how can we take this instruction that Prabhupada gave and make it 10%? And we kind of got stuck. Because the response was, well, if you can do 50%, great, but we know at least to be in good standing, 10%, something, let's move in that direction. Something. But because it's a principle. So, then somebody else said, well, that example of Rupa Goswami, well, Prabhupada referred to it, it was in the retirement phase of his grihastha life, and he was moving into renounced life, and that's what his savings was, and that's how he distributed his savings. Which is true. But Prabhupada referred to it in terms of how a householder should conduct their affairs. So it's one of those things that we don't have consensus on. The 50% rule. But the principle is without question that of one's earnings, the whole thing belongs to Krishna. And how do you deploy the whole of the thing that belongs to Krishna? Some guidelines need to be there, not just arbitrary, but some guidelines and standards. So some nice percentage of what one earns should be charitably given for householders. You want to pursue it some more?
Well, I was thinking that it is not, you know, although it has been laid down there and it has been mind-boggling, you know, because of practicality. I mean, just like you were saying, the Maya-based thing, I mean, it sounds nice, but you can't live it. Similarly, you know, it's there, and, you know, but I was thinking that if that is not adopted to some extent, even like, then, you know, one becomes very attached. So, just like in the Bhagavad Gita, charity, you know, in different modes are there. And if one doesn't, you know, give charity and, you know, then he becomes, it's just one way of getting us to become detached.
Yeah. It's, I'll say this, amplify your point. I'll repeat his point in case you didn't hear it. Saying if there isn't something, then the tendency of the one who is earning, the householder, is to become attached. And so in principle, for the sake of detachment, which is what this verse is addressing, then something in principle is to be given in charity if the householder's duty. I was asked by the Houston congregation one time, you know, you're going to be here for a few days. Can you speak every day on the theme of the duties of a householder? So I said, sure. I've researched Prabhupada's teachings on the duties of a householder. And the number one repeated message of the duty of a householder is charity. The number one duty of a householder is charity. Both for their protection, as you're mentioning, because otherwise attachment, and what's the use of having something that's going to make you more bound to the cycle of birth and death? For a devotee, that's not something they want to do. But also, it's the flip side is there. That's your service to the rest of society. Of the other three ashrams, it's a no-no to have a job. Should a brahmachari have a job? Then he's not a brahmachari. Or vanaprastha and sannyas. Should sannyasis go get jobs? Should vanaprasthas be eager to have jobs? Go get another job? So if one ashram is sustaining the other three ashrams, it must be charitable. It's their duty. It's part of the arrangement of spiritual elevation for the society. And then the flip side is otherwise they get attached. And you know, the whole of spiritual life gets choked by that miserliness. So, charitable. In the right way, in the right places, at the right time, in the right manner. In principle, absolutely. And what again, Rupa Goswami's verse is saying, otherwise bhakti is destroyed if that's missing. Anything else? Yes. A devotee can make his household a temple.
Yes, it will. But then again,
they
said this is a voluntary process.
Okay. It's a voluntary process.
So, giving charity to the temple is just like a grihastha holding the temple. So, voluntarily, he might want to give to the temple. So, he can cook our food and then just start him alone. So, can you please see that?
Yeah. I'll be glad to speak on that one. Again, this is from a practical perspective on two things on a GBC level. As you know, Tridati's been going, representing your region here as one of the deputies in the GBC deputy program to help us perform our GBC service. So one of the other activities that's going on is persons who are taking part in strategic planning is how do we want our future to be like. So one of the things that one of the groups of activities was preaching. We want to have a really strong, vigorous outreach, and the group that started with that said, well, what's the use of having lots and lots and lots and lots of outreach if you don't have nice, wholesome places to take care of the fruits of that outreach, that preaching. So that kind of spun off into another group called Devotee Care. And that Devotee Care group has grown and grown. And they've got a newsletter, they've got a publication, they've got a website. They're traveling around the world and giving talks on Devotee Care. I got their two written publications, or two hard copy publications, and two CDs I can share with the devotees that would like to see. So, Devotee Care. And then, other things, and so many other things. So it just happened that some of our GBC members also expressed concern, what about Krishna care? Because we have deities around the world where standards are shrinking and diminishing. You know, Prabhupada gave us very nice standards. And, you know, for whatever the various reasons, they don't have the money, or they don't have the manpower, or they don't have the will, or they don't have, you know, the training, that the standards are shrinking and shrinking, and it's like alarming. So, okay, devotee care, but what about Krishna care? And one of the points that you just brought up is one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons why we have temples to gather people together to practice Krishna consciousness together, and they start practicing Krishna consciousness together, and they want to practice Krishna consciousness in their home, and so they start developing a nice little deity worship program in their home, and then the deity in the temple gets neglected. That's not good. This should be in addition to that, not at the expense of that. So if I'm going to buy my householder and I want to have some nice deity worship in my home, that's good. Make my home a temple, or like a temple, but not at the neglect of both funds and time serving the deity. Otherwise we'll have what Prabhupada said happened in many cases to the churches that then became Hare Krishna temples, because people stopped going to the temple or to the church. The church became empty. They couldn't afford to maintain the church anymore, so they had to sell it to the Hare Krishnas. So then the Hare Krishnas come along and establish deities, and then everybody gets enlightened in Krishna consciousness, establishes deities in their home, and they stop going to the temple and giving contributions to help maintain the deity in the temple. Then we have a problem. That's not good. So another practical example of that was in Los Angeles, where Prabhupada had said it, make your home a temple. So right across the street, there are people, householders, that were engaged in deity worship. They couldn't walk across the street and worship the deity in the temple. They went to the Arti in Kirtan, but they didn't do deity worship in the temple, and it was like difficult. So Prabhupada, you know, got very strong about it. Not deity worship at the expense of the deity in the temple. So the standard in one home can be very simple. Very simple. And the worship in the temple is to be of a very clear, strong, high standard. And finance also contributing to help maintain and support the temple. And do the other things, because temple is not, deity worship is, as you said, it's not just the shringar, the dresses and the ornaments and the garlands, it's distributing prasadam. That's, one can do that from one's home too, but not at the expense of the temple. The temple should have a very strong program of prasad distribution. Not just, you know, Sunday feast, come and take some prasadam. But it's part of the worship of deity. He writes in second canto Bhagavatam, deity worship is incomplete without prasadam distribution. Anyway, so it's important to maintain the standards that Prabhupada gave us in his temples, which should not be at the expense of what happens in somebody's home. You want to do, and do both. If you can't do both, do one. Mm-hmm. Not the one in your home. At the expense of the temple. Anything else? Okay. Well, I brought some Maha Prasadam from Radha Govinda Temple. And I don't want to go back with a box of Maha Prasadam to New York, so you can help me out. Thanks for the light time. Yeah.